And we are live with the Standing Room Spartans podcast. Your host, Kevin Parker, co-host Scott Martin here on a Monday morning. We are recording on a Sunday morning, so if anything pops from now until then, you will know why we are not covering it. Hopefully, I don't know, you're always hoping that there's some random football commitment that gets thrown in there or something, but as of now, it is Sunday morning. Scott, how's your weekend going? We've got a good episode ahead of us here, but how are we doing on a fine Sunday morning?
I took my dog out yesterday morning just for a normal morning walk. And, you know, shorts and a t-shirt, kind of the default for the past few months. And for the first time, the second half of this year, the back end of this summer, I felt a little chilly. And it made me think about fall mornings, waiting for college football to start up on a Saturday morning. Getting ready for game day, and man, great vibes to start the weekend. I've been kind of just riding that wave the rest of the weekend. So
that's nice. It's been hot out here. We went to the beach yesterday. Our new apartment is only like 20 minutes from the sea. So we went to the beach. The dog was absolutely berserk the whole time, playing fetch, running into the water, threw up like 8 times from drinking too much salt water. So we had a good time, but yeah, it's still hot out here. Hopefully we're going to get some rain this week. It'll cool us down and make me think of fall, but for now it's still just summer, hot, annoying temperatures. But yeah, we got some fun stuff to get to today. We are predicting the offensive starters. Thursday we'll get to the defensive starters as we continue to plug along here towards the season. I think we have both. I have finished my predictions for the season. I'm pretty sure you have also finished your predictions from the season. So we're ready. We're ready to go. Ola, my fiance, actually, I didn't tell you this. She made a nice little graphic for us in Canva that will look a lot better than what we had last year to put on the social. So when the time comes, we'll be ready to unveil those. Next week, we're getting into the predictions, but very excited for that. Obviously, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribed. You're following us on all the social media stuff and telling your friends and family. Seriously, we are less than 3 weeks away from Michigan State football. And for friends and family that you know generally listen to podcasts, if they are Michigan State fans, you can just give them a little nudge towards our podcast here. We would greatly appreciate that. Leave a review. 5 stars is much appreciated. And yeah, with all of that out of the way, Scott, you were watching some preseason football yesterday, huh?
I was. So I saw that the Seahawks and Steelers were going to be playing. And for those who aren't following the NFL, the Seahawks are featuring our very own Kenneth Walker, which is, he's still being called Ken, and I'm just
everywhere.
Use the whatever.
Every media, fantasy football, normal football media, everybody is calling him Ken.
I'm just going to use whatever small platform we have here and scream into our echo chamber that his name is Kenneth.
I heard somebody, I think it was a fantasy football podcast. I don't remember which one. The host said Kenneth, and then corrected himself to Ken. So that's how much that has just caught on randomly.
I don't, like, we need some friendly plug in, like, the national football NFL media group. To, like, was there something they received, like a name guide for the whole rookie class? I almost said freshman class. Rookie class that had Ken in it? I mean, it started with like the combine stuff, right? Going into the draft. And like he publicly came out and he was like, nah, yeah, I don't know where that came from, but I my name's Kenneth. And I was like, all right, it's cleared up. Water under the bridge, right? And
everybody will call him Kenneth now.
And I don't get it, man. But anyway, so he was playing on the Seahawks. Penny was injured, so he was the starter. He may have been the starter for a preseason game anyway. I don't know, but got a good spell. Decent showing, but I didn't really flash too much. That offensive line struggled again. I don't know if they had their starting O-line in or not, but had a couple nice receptions, which was nice to see, something we didn't see a whole lot of, obviously, at MSU. But and on the other side of the ball,
but Scott, I heard the whole pre-draft process that he cannot catch the ball and he is a liability on passing downs.
Yeah. Well, if there's a place to find out, it's the Seahawks, because they just get their running backs the ball as much as possible. Yeah. So on the other side of the ball in Pittsburgh, we had Connor Hayward, which I love the extension of this story, right? From Michigan State, started as a pretty, I don't know, I would say slow-footed running back, but like as a tight end, his feet don't seem slow. Anyway, just never really took off as a back. Obviously, the story continued to tight end and H-back, whatever you classify him as. And now, I mean, the NFL's Twitter account tweeted a Connor Hayward highlight. Did you ever in your life think that sentence would come out of anyone's mouth?
Unless there was another Connor Hayward that came through the program like 10 years from now. No,
I think he does have the advantage in terms of like publicity, that obviously Cam Hayward is a successful, established NFL player. So like there's name familiarity there, and there's a reason to kind of bring him up in the preseason. But nonetheless, great game for him. Had his first catch was like fully extended fingertips, showing off his soft hands. He had a 2-point conversion, so he got on the scoreboard. He was playing, I don't know, 30, 40, 50% of their offensive snaps and had some good plays, a few receptions. So I think he's in a good spot to earn himself a roster position. He was on special teams as well, which in the regular season, I could very much see him playing on plenty of special teams. So just a great story. Obviously, we'll continue to follow our Spartans in the NFL and keep an eye on them. Good reason to turn on a Saturday night, preseason football game when my team wasn't playing.
Yeah, I didn't watch a minute of it. I saw the highlights come across Twitter, but I heard they had Kenneth Walker returning kicks, which is interesting strategy,
I think,
to say the least.
One, okay, maybe two. It terrified me, like just watching him. I wanted to cover my eyes. I was like, no, like
preseason kick returns are not where you want to put an impact player. That's
I will say, like, for those who haven't followed Kenneth Walker closely, like the dude works out like a madman, right? Like it was something him and his dad did from like a young age, and he's still just like a total gym rat. And just like they had the cameras on him in like the warm-ups or whatever. His legs obviously have always been tree trunks. That dude's arms are like as big as my head now.
Yeah.
Like he spent the whole off season just in the gym, and you can tell that he is bricked up.
Yeah. There's no questioning his work ethic when you just see the transition year over year of his body. It's ridiculous. So elsewhere, before we get to this, before we get to the meat of the episode here, we do have a little announcement here. We've been playing around with some different contests throughout the last couple of years, whether it's a bowl pick'em or a March Madness. And last year, as you know, if you were listening, Scott and I went through our weekly college football picks against the spread. Every Friday, we put out our episode, and we had five or six games on the national slate, including obviously the Michigan State game. And it was fun, you know, just for people who love college football as a whole, as a sport, and are watching more than just Michigan State. Fun place to come and listen to us kind of give a little quick breakdown of some of the big national games, make our picks against the spread. We were both like 70% last year or something ridiculous. I pulled it out, our little contest, in championship week. Like it was late.
One game difference. The whole season, we won by one.
We were both on fire through the whole year. And it's funny, too, because I remember us having so many opposite picks that it's funny that it all came down to that last weekend. But I came home with a nice Nike long sleeve. It's like one of those light hoodies from Nike for Michigan State gear from Scott. So we'll see if I have to return the favor this year or not. But this year, we found a platform. It's called Run Your Pool. We will blast it all over social media as we actually announce it next week. But for those of you who are listening who want to kind of get in on that, we are definitely going to be doing this. So we are going to have, it's basically a year-long picks pool. You'll be able to make your picks throughout the entire season, track your picks. We'll have a leaderboard. It'll be a lot of fun. So just kind of teasing that out for now, we will decide on a prize. We do have a little bit of a budget for a prize. So it'll be something definitely worth looking into. And if you are a college football fan, absolutely follow along with us. We'll be, you know, announcing our leaderboards throughout the year. We'll be shouting you guys out who are making good or bad picks. Like if you're 0-6 against the spread 1 week, we'll obviously make sure to mention that as well. But we'll have some fun with it. We're still trying to figure out the details of it. Next week, we will have more information, but definitely, definitely make sure you're in on that because that'll be a lot of fun. And other than that, speaking of point spreads and things like that, we are, 2 weeks away from actual college football with Northwestern and Nebraska, and DraftKings is the go-to for college football betting. But also, they have the first and only NFT fantasy game licensed by the NFLPA. It's called Rainmakers Football. You can play for all season long for millions in prizes by building the ultimate NFT franchise. Right now, everyone can get their first full roster starter pack for free. Playing Rainmakers is simple. Build, buy, sell, bid, and win player card NFTs of the biggest names in the game through regular drops and auctions on DraftKings Marketplace. Craft lineups of athletes from your NFT collection and earn points for touchdowns, receptions, just like in daily fantasy football, and build your NFT franchise for free and enter free Rainmakers contests all season long to compete for millions in prizes. The next generation of fantasy sports is here. Download the DraftKings daily fantasy app now. Sign up with promo code TPPN for the Pigskin Podcast Network, of which we're a proud member. Click the Rainmakers tile and opt in to get your first card free, plus play for millions in prizes all season long while building the ultimate NFT fantasy franchise with Rainmakers Football. That's promo code TPPN. Build, play, win only at DraftKings. Contest entries depend on type and number of NFTs held. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, so Scott, we are getting into the meat of our predictions as the offseason is rapidly coming to a close. And today we are predicting the starting 11 on the offensive side of the ball. There's a couple that are very obvious. There's a couple that might take a little bit more thought. We're going to kind of have some fun here with our predictions versus what we would like to happen. We're going to have some fun here with some first or second year players who will exceed expectations, who might get on the field, some of the kind of quote unquote breakout players that you don't really see coming right now. Today will be the offense. Thursday will be the defense. So I don't know. You let me know where do we want to start with this? Do we want to just get the obvious one out of the way, or what are we doing here?
We're going to start up front. Okay. I think the specialists are always a little more exciting. I mean, the offensive line wins or loses games. So we'll keep this the exciting specialists for the end, kind of the climax of the episode, if you're comfortable with that word. So we'll start up front. We talked a little bit about this the last episode. I feel like we've been talking about the offensive line quite a bit this offseason for obvious reasons. Some of these may be obvious. Some of them aren't. We're going to go through like the two deep. So first and second string, I think the first string is a little bit less mysterious, and the second string will bring up a little more chatter. So I'll let you start this off. We'll go left to right because that's how we read. So starting left tackle, Kevin, probably drum roll, probably not too much of a surprise, but who you got?
So left tackle, obviously going Jarrett Horst. I think that's kind of a no-brainer. He played really well when he was on the field last year for us, was kind of an anchor on the left side. It's something that we had really missed since Jack Conklin, and I'm not comparing him to, he is not Jack Conklin, all right? But I think there was a void for a long time of like a really dependable left tackle, and I think Horst was that. Few too many penalties. We're going to have to clean that up, but I think Horst is as steady as it gets there at left tackle. JD Duplain at left guard, again, is a pretty obvious one. He's been steady in there for a long time now. Nick Samek is going to be your center. I'm fairly confident in that. He's gotten a lot of snaps really the last 3 years, and finally looking to take over that starting spot. Right guard, I think this is one of those what you think will happen versus what you hope will happen. I think it will be Matt Carrick at right guard. And I'm not super comfortable in that prediction, but if I have to take my personal opinions out of it and just say, like, what do I think will happen based on the tea leaves we're able to read, I think Matt Carrick is going to be your starting right guard. And I think Spencer Brown is pretty much a lock to be your right tackle. Again, the ceiling is super high there, and I'm not as high on his performance against Pittsburgh as a lot of people were. He gave up 3 QB hurries in that game, according to PFF. There was the actual sack production or tackles for loss production wasn't really there, but when you allow 3 pressures in a single game, I know it's your first start. I just think that there was more reasons to worry than a lot of people seem to come out with. He had a couple penalties in that game as well. Spencer Brown, I think, is a lock to start at right tackle, and I think the ceiling is super high. But I do think we should kind of tamper those expectations that he's not going to come out and be a first team all Big Ten tackle this year. I hope he does, but I'm not as sold as a lot of people. So there's my starting five.
Yeah, I have the same five. I think right guard is the most interesting spot right now. You've got Carrick and Green, obviously are the obvious choices. It's Sunday morning, folks. The brain's like 50% right now. But I think there's an opportunity, and we'll get into this as we get into the second string, for if someone else, not in that group of two, wants to make a run at this starting five for this offensive line, I think that's the spot to do it. So I'll give my second string. I don't have anything really to add to your first string. I'll say this. The further right you go, the less confident you get. Brown and maybe a little more confident than that right guard spot. But the left side should be, as long as they're healthy, a solid foundation for that line.
Yeah, and I wonder if that'll tend to be like kind of every time you're looking at like 3rd and 2, are we running on the left side? Right. I wonder, maybe that could be a little bit too predictable, and hopefully that doesn't really be the case. But I would look for that early. Like if in high leverage situations, red zone, 3rd and short, 4th and short, are we just continuing to run to the left side because that's where we trust the O-line? That'll be interesting.
We hammer the left side the first 2 weeks of the year. Left side zone runs on 2nd and 3rd and short. And then let's call it 2nd and 5 against Washington. First drive, you're on that left side zone flea flicker for the touchdown.
Okay. There it is.
Anyway,
the flea flicker's back.
Oh, it will be back. No doubt about it. Second string. This is interesting. We got a little bit of, I think Chris Kapilovich did a presser early in fall camp and kind of gave us a sneak peek behind the curtain on who was kind of spelling in at second string. So left to right, the tackles, I think it still needs to be determined which side each will play, or at least I don't know which side it'll play, but I'll just give you both tackles. I have Brandon Baldwin and Ethan Boyd. I don't know which side they'll be. They both have the size to play left. It's just a matter of which one I think you trust more to put on that left side. But both, I mean, we're going to get into these names. We don't know. Like,
yeah,
they're giant mysteries. We'll see.
Literally and figuratively giant.
Giant mysteries. Moving inside, I'll put Green at backup center, because I think if you put him at a natural position on the second string, it's going to be center. But that said, I think he could play anywhere in the middle three. And that goes for a couple of these guys.
I agree with you that if Green isn't starting, he'll basically be the backup for all three of those interior spots, right? Yeah. Whoever goes down first, I guess, of those three, that's a bad way to say it, but he'll just be the one to fill in whatever he needs to.
Yeah, so as you look at the rest of the interior O-line, there are a ton of youngsters that could make a difference. Kevin Wigginton, Gino Vandermark, Gavin Brocious, Dooley Phillips, both freshmen, but bigger dudes. If I had to pick two to fill in, I'm going to go Gino Vandermark at left guard and Kevin Wigginton at right guard. They've got the leg up on being redshirt freshmen, whereas Brocious and Phillips are both true freshmen at obviously a position that you got to be pretty developed to fill in and play. And this is where it gets a little sketchy, right? Like beyond Vandermark and Wigginton, you're looking at either dudes who have been around the program long enough to show that they're not earning snaps or dudes who just got to the program. And in a position like offensive line, you have to have a rotation, especially in the interior. Like you're not going to put five guys out for 100% of the snaps. So you need guys you can trust to move the ball, to move the line of scrimmage and keep the offense moving. So Baldwin, Vandermark, Green, Wigginton, Boyd is my second line, offensive line. Kevin, give me yours, and then we'll go through a youngster in this group we think could jump up the list.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. I know that Kapilovich has specifically mentioned Baldwin and Boyd, so I guess that's where you would lean at tackle. And then the interior, like you said, it's just kind of picking the guys that you think maybe you could throw Fincher in there. I don't know, but yeah, I'm just going to be right there with you. And then I guess just if we are just picking a young guy to exceed expectations or to fill into a role that we didn't really expect or however you want to frame that, I guess I think Brandon Baldwin could be a really good player. The problem is you're only going to see him if a tackle goes down, because he's not going to be filling in for a guard spot. And I don't think you're really going to rotate the tackles, right? Those are just going to be there until one of them gets hurt. So with that said, I'll say Baldwin, but I think that Vandermark has a pretty good chance of actually kind of getting a steady rotation in some form or fashion. And in that sense, he could be a guy that you look at going into next year when a couple of these guys have graduated out and saying like, all right, we saw a bit from Vandermark last year to where we feel pretty comfortable with him starting at one of those guard spots or whatever it is. So I'll kind of name both of those.
Yeah, we will need another interior offensive line starter next year. So if everyone's healthy, this year is basically a tryout for all the youngsters. If everyone isn't healthy, then someone's going to fill in that spot, obviously, yeah, sooner than later.
And that's the biggest thing with looking at these random freshmen and redshirt freshmen is you can easily look at this for 2022 and say, well, yeah, if nobody gets hurt, like we don't need any of these guys. So it doesn't really matter. It's like when you're looking at it from the viewpoint of Mel Tucker or Chris Kapilovich, it really matters because you're going to need one, if not more than one of these guys to start next season. And you don't want to be going into next season's. This is where it was nice seeing Spencer Brown in the bowl game, right? We at least have something to go off of rather than just, yeah, I guess Spencer Brown is in there. He played like 60 snaps in his career. It's like, no, he played and started a full game against a good team. And that's where you can go into this year with a bit more confidence and at least knowing he can hold his own there. You're going to need to see that.
Spencer Brown is a redshirt junior. He's been on campus for four years. Whereas, you know, Vandermark and some of these other youngsters, they're redshirt freshmen, second year on campus. And beyond that, when you look at this interior offensive line, Nick Samick and JD Duplain are both seniors. Now they have another year of eligibility after this year because they have the COVID exemption. But a guy like JD Duplain, if he has a really strong year and it's his senior year, if he's got a good draft stock, he could very well leave after this season. at a position like offensive line where injuries could always be looming. I mean, just in the game of football in general, he may think this is his best chance. And then you got two guards to replace. Mm-hmm. So same thing could happen to Samak, but he's always been half a year behind Duplain in terms of, I think, production and readiness. But I think if I have to pick a youngster here, I'm going to go with Gino Vandermark, like you said, because he's going to get on the field. And I think that right guard spot, like Green and Carrick, I think to an extent, we kind of know what their ceiling is. And we don't know what these youngsters' ceilings are. So if Vandermark comes out there and really shows that he can execute live, I mean, I don't expect him to be starting by the end of the season. But if I had to pick one of these youngsters that could, I think the combination of his talent and the opportunity at a position he can play gives him the chance to climb up that depth chart this season. So keep an eye on Gino Vandermark, New Jersey's finest.
Yeah. So where are we going next?
We'll get the we'll rip the Band-Aid off here on quarterback. So I don't think this needs too much time on first string. Obviously, Peyton Thorne is the guy. But
I don't know, Scott. Is there a competition brewing?
The second string competition is absolutely brewing, and we're just going to mix your second string pick with like the youngster that you think might. We'll just summarize it as: can either of the youngsters usurp Noah Kim, the long time, he's a redshirt sophomore, but long time backup for that second string job?
No, I still think when push comes to shove, as much as we would like Kadenhauser to be the backup, just to see what that would look like for the future and building that, I think as a college football coach, you have to always be thinking about the future, and you always have to be thinking, all right, if Kadenhauser is the next guy, we need to see him, right? We need to get him on the field and make sure that we give him a chance to develop a little bit and see other competition and see different coverages. But at the same time, your most important thing, and we always have to kind of remember this when we talk about starting the freshman or starting the four-star guy with potential, the most important thing for a college football coach, I know it sounds dumb, but we have to actually say this, is winning games. You have to take advantage of every single season as a college football coach, because you can enter the hot seat real quick. You can start losing recruits because of a losing season real quick. So at the end of the day, you have to think about, if Peyton Thorne were to go down, knock on wood, hopefully we don't have to explore this, but you have to think not in terms of, well, this is a good excuse to get this guy, this young guy, some snaps. You have to think about it as, how do I win next week? Who gives me the best chance to win next week? And I ultimately think that it would be Noah Kim. They've talked about how his tangibles, like his arm strength and all that stuff, is kind of better than people think it is. And they've all glowed about him in terms of like on a chalkboard in the playbook for the last couple years. So I really think if something were to happen to where we need it, I think it would be Noah Kim.
If Peyton Thorne were to leave the program after this year, go to the NFL because he wins the Heisman, whatever, and Noah Kim started the year, can you imagine the pressure to, like, you look at Cade McNamara and JJ McCarthy in Ann Arbor, yeah, right? And like, it would be absolutely that situation where, like, even if Noah Kim was like unbiasedly clearly the best option,
winning games,
the pressure, you know, to get Kadenhauser, even Hamp Faye, depending on what we see from him, the pressure to get one of those guys in as soon as Noah Kim, mm-hmm, has a slip up would be immense. But
he throws one interception and
yeah.
So, it would be anyway, like the Damian Terry chants that were just like every other week for a couple years there in East Lansing.
Yeah. So I was this weekend, I was in one of the consume as much MSU football content as I can rabbit holes. And I saw a video, I think it was like an MSU football Instagram, you know, video like they've been putting out. And I saw a pass from Kadenhauser to like Jack Nickel, gave me a little glimpse of the future, right? And then they flashed like Jeremy Bernard, and they flashed Antonio Gates and stuff. And I was like, you know, not this year. And I love where we're at this year.
Yeah.
But like, man, I'm excited for this offense of the future. I think we have such a great pipeline in that passing game developing that I think we can be excited for a while. But yeah, right now this season, Noah Kim, I think he's just the guy that you have a little more trust in. He's been diagnosing and reacting to college speed plays for a year or two more than the other guys. And I think that's the biggest question really with these three. I think they all have the physical ability to play the position, but who can diagnose defenses, who can make their reads the quickest and make the best decisions? Obviously, that's really what dictates playing time for quarterbacks at the end of the day. So
yeah, like when we talk about a backup quarterback, it's as simple as like who gives you the best chance in a game that, hey, it's your backup quarterback, you're probably not supposed to win, but who gives you the best chance to beat Washington or Minnesota or Wisconsin, right? Like if we have Peyton Thorne, we're not going to beat Ohio State. So if we don't have Peyton Thorne, we're definitely like, that's just a total misnomer. If we're talking about like Indiana at home, you can convince me that we should just play Caden Hauser because we're going to win the game anyway. And it would be nice to get him some reps. But I'm talking at Illinois, one of those sneaky games where it's like this has to be a win. Who gives us the best chance of winning that game? And I think objectively, most people would probably answer Noah Kim.
Still so excited to see the first couple of games of the season.
Oh, I am too.
When we get this glimpse into these quarterbacks. That's really, I think, from a quarterback position, we got two games, right? Because Washington, you're playing your starters. And after that, any Big Ten game, you're not taking. Yeah. Unless we're like up huge, we're not taking our starters out. So we'll have two games to enjoy it, and then the real fun starts. So
yeah, we might be able to get a 24-0 lead at halftime against Akron. But
speaking of running backs, well, we weren't speaking of running backs, but we are now. The search for the next Kenneth Walker, as the media would love to have you think.
God.
I guess we're part of the media. Well, I don't know if we are or not, but
I hate that even Michigan State beat reporters are getting sucked into this.
It's the clicks, man. It's, you just take K9's name, you put it somewhere to get someone to click on it, and we're probably doing the same thing. Running back is it's an interesting position. Obviously, two of the biggest transfer names of the cycle in Jalen Berger and Jarek Broussard. You've got a guy like Davion Prim coming up through the wings, and then you've got some old reliable. Reliable is an interesting word for them, but Eli Collins and Jordan Simmons, who they've been around a while, and you know you're going to get 3 yards in a cloud of dust with either of them. So this is an interesting one. I mean, talking on like starters, I guess that would be your first snap guy, right? Your first down guy. So I'll start this one. I think Jalen Berger is the name for like your first down back. That said, I think if you're looking at the most prominent guy in this backfield, I think it's Jarek Broussard. In terms of the guy who could like really make the biggest impact on games, I think Jarek Broussard is a little bit more impactful. But you've described them as your 1A and your 1B this offseason. I think that's really where it's at. But if we're picking a starter, first guy on the field for the offense, I'll go with Jalen Berger. I think his game transmits to a first down back better.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, this backfield is going to resemble 2015 a lot more than it resembles, you know, any other year. 2015, you had LJ Scott, 146 carries, Madre London, 120 carries, Gerald Holmes, 110 carries. All three of them had a few catches, right? I think you're going to see a lot of Jarek Broussard. I think you're going to see a lot of Jalen Berger. And I think you're going to see it, the way I'm kind of looking at it is you're going to see like 40% Jarek Broussard, 35% Jalen Berger, and then 25% some Eli Collins, some Harold Joyner, some Davion Prim. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it. So in that sense, I guess Jarek Broussard is your quote-unquote starter. because I think he'll get the biggest workload of everybody. But I think you're going to see like 5-6 different names get some semblance of like a consistent workload. And you're going to see at least 3 guys get pretty significant reps in a similar vein as 2015 with LJ Scott, Madre London, Gerald Holmes. Even Delton Williams had like 25 carries. RJ Shelton, I know he was more of a wide receiver. He had 25 carries. Like, that's kind of where I see this backfield. I don't see a workhorse. I see a pretty deep stable of a lot of different skill sets and a lot of different ways that guys can beat you.
Yeah, I see this panning out kind of similar to how like a college basketball team works their rotation in the season, right? So early season, everyone's touching the floor. Obviously, your top tier guys are getting more minutes, but you've got in this backfield, all 6 guys are going to be rotating for the first couple weeks. And then you'll just narrow it down based on who's most productive. Yeah. We would expect that to be Berger and Broussard, but the other 4 guys, like what niches are they filling well and excelling in? And then just when you're calling the same play for each of them, which one's getting the most out of it, right? And I think Davion Prim, I mean, Berger and Broussard are new blood, obviously, and they're really going to staple this backfield. But you look at the rest of them, I mean, speaking of youngsters that could make a difference, Davion Prim's the only first or second year running back on the team that's not a walk-on, so he would be the obvious name. But speaking on Davion Prim, I do think he could exceed like a Simmons or a Collins or a Joyner. I mean, Joyner's already kind of a niche guy, right? Kind of a passing game specialist, I'd call him. But
he's kind of the only one who has like a pretty specific role. Like everybody else is kind of a good, well-rounded back, and he has a pretty specific niche, like you said, that might help him in carving out a role for himself. But you're not going to see Harold Joyner on first down take a power run to the right side. Like, that's just not in the cards.
So looking at the other 3, Collins, Simmons, and Prim, Collins and Simmons, like, you know what you're going to get. They're probably going to take care of the ball. They're probably going to fall forward. Jordan Simmons is going to put his head down and run like a cartoon and slam into the first thing that gets in his way,
even if it's the back of his offensive lineman.
So if Davion Prim can come out and show that, I think this is the thing that Simmons and Collins are missing that Prim could or could not have, is the ability to make someone miss. Like Collins and Simmons, they can find a hole and they can drive their legs through it, but like they're running in a straight line. If Davion Prim can come out and make someone miss in the open field and show a little bit of dynamics in his running style, I think he could jump up the pecking order really quick.
And on that point too, he might be the only one with the capability of being like a big play guy. Because that's one thing that the more I've thought about this running back room that I'm a little bit worried about. You don't have a guy who can bust off a 60-yard touchdown run. And, you know, we're not even going to mention the guy's name last year who did that a lot. And that really made a big difference in some point totals and some games that we probably shouldn't have won or wouldn't have won without him busting off some 50, 60, 70-yard runs. I don't really know if we have a guy this year who's capable of that. And it can work. Like 2015, to go back to them, it was the same thing. Like none of those guys were busting off 60-yard touchdown runs. They were all consistently ripping off like 10 to 20-yard runs and nice little chunk plays when you needed it. But we talk about how explosive our offense in general was last year, and a lot of it was the flea flickers and the Jalen Naylor bombs down the field, but a lot of it was just Kenneth Walker taking a handoff and running 75 yards for a touchdown. And I just don't see that element in the offense this year. And that, again, you can have a successful offense without that, but it definitely makes it a little bit more challenging.
Yeah. Home run threat from a running back would be a huge, not addition because we had it last year, but a huge thing to find in this group. And you're right. Other than Prim, I don't know if Prim has it, but we know the other guys really don't. I mean, I watched Kenneth Walker with my own two eyes rip off a 94-yard touchdown run at Rutgers, and I just don't see him outrunning entire anyone on this group outrunning entire defenses unless Prim's got the speed. But running back in general, six guys who can come on the field and give you some opportunity, and hopefully a couple of those will exceed though just kind of filling the gap at running back and really show that they have star potential. But exciting group, exciting new names, and some old faithfuls. Moving to probably the best position on the offense, I don't think anyone would really argue with that at wide receiver. Two steady names on the first line, Reed and Mosley. I don't think that's reinventing the wheel here. We know those guys will be there. The third wide receiver, Kevin, I'll give you the first stab at this. I think one name, we're probably on the same page. I think one name is starting to rise above the rest for that third spot.
Yeah, I was banging the Montori Foster drum for a long time, but it's Keon Coleman, dude. The way that they've been talking about him and pumping up his, you know, they've been putting out highlights of him at camp, and they've really been throwing that name in your face enough to where I would be shocked if it was anybody other than Keon Coleman. The interesting thing is, this is a question for you. So I think it's pretty obvious. If we're lining up with three wide receivers, you're going to have Jaden Reed and Keon Coleman on the outside and Trey Mosley in the slot. Trey Mosley ran like 90% of his snaps last year out of the slot. I expect that to continue. Question is, if we're lining up two tight ends, two wide receivers, if we're lining up a tight end, a fullback, and two wide receivers, who would the two be more often than not? Because like I said, Trey Mosley ran 90% of his snaps out of the slot last season. And you would think, just, you know, if we're doing it numerically, like Jaden Reed is our number one wide receiver. Trey Mosley, probably our number two wide receiver. But does that mean that he's in 11 personnel formations? Like that part is pretty interesting to me.
I think it's obviously situational. If we got two tight ends in because we're in the red zone, I think it makes sense to have Keon Coleman in there for the extra red zone threat. I think one factor that'll play into that decision is who can block better. If we got 11 personnel in, chances are we're at least trying to threaten the run. If not, we're actually running more. And this staff has made it very clear that downfield blocking from the wide receivers and skill positions is a huge priority. And it's one of the reasons Kenneth Walker was able to take so many home runs to the house last season. So
downfield blocking last year was unbelievable.
Unbelievable. No block, no rock, as they say. So I think Coleman, I mean, he's got the size to block a corner really well. I mean, I'm not saying Trey Mosley's a poor blocker at all, but just speaking like in football terms, Keon Coleman's 6'4", 200 plus pounds. You would think he could handle his own against most corners, assuming he has the quickness to stay in front of him. But Keon Coleman, I think, adds so much of a extra dimension to this offense that last year we were lacking. We said a few times that like the whole wide receiver room last year was 6 foot, 195 pounds. Every single one of them was within like 1 inch and 5 to 10 pounds of that. Keon Coleman all of a sudden comes in at 6'4" and extremely athletic. That's well documented at this point. Obviously on the basketball team, had a great high school basketball career. You would imagine that would transition well to jump balls in the red zone, and just a strong dude who by all accounts is excelling. So I don't know if it'll be like he's the new name or if it's going to be like he's the new star. That I think is a big question, but I think Keon Coleman's going to be on the field more plays than he's not when that offense is out there. And it's, I know, something that this fan base has been really excited to see ever since he committed. He was probably the biggest name recruit with the most excitement from that COVID class, right? Committed without ever visiting campus from Louisiana. Yeah, really excited to see what he can do. And the last position, staying with the pass catchers, another interesting one with how much Michigan State plays with one tight end, H-back, depending on the formation.
Before you move to tight end, I am curious. How much do you think we've started to see some smoke? How much do you weigh the possibility of seeing Jeremy Bernard, Antonio Gates, Tyrell Henry, of seeing one of these freshmen actually make an impact, play 100, 200 snaps, pull in 15, 20 catches? Like, I'm not talking, you know, step in and be a starter, but I'm talking step in and be an actual part of the offense.
Thank you for reminding me this is a 2D episode and not just the starters. Blew right by it. Last season, Keon Coleman was in the two deep, right? He was a backup. I don't know if he was fourth, fifth, or sixth, but he was in that group, right? And he got a fair, I think you looked up his snap count before we started recording from last season.
Yeah, I got it here. He was on the field for so like 40 some snaps, basically less than 50.
So pretty limited workload.
Right.
That said,
I wouldn't say that he was a part of the offense last year. I would say he was just a depth piece who got some snaps. I'm talking a role bigger than what Keon Coleman had last year.
So we really didn't rotate our wide receivers too much, which is interesting. You'd think we would have, but we kept them on the field. I don't expect that trend to change, you know, if the guys we're putting out there are being productive. So I'd expect the top three, maybe with a fourth, to really rotate in. So I think it'll be hard for one of the young wide receivers to really crack into any meaningful production. There's two, three names that I think will get in there. I put together my next three. Montori Foster, I think, pretty clearly is number four. He's the only guy who really did anything last year. Cade McDonald, I think, is like a reliable target. He also went to high school with Peyton Thorne, a little bit less publicized than Jaden Reed, but they have good rapport and he's made plays in the past. So I think he could be a spell guy when you need him. I did put Jeremy Bernard in there because I think if Keon Coleman was like the number six guy, I think Jeremy Bernard could also be that. But Antonio Gates, Tyrell Henry, like both could be ahead of Bernard. I don't know. Bernard seemed to be the most developed in high school, just in terms of how refined his game was. But
and he was the one who was here for spring compared to the other guys.
And there will be times when we have four wide receivers on the field. I think that fourth would be Montori Foster. So that's my top six. Bernard's kind of my top youngster outside the top line, but Keon Coleman obviously is the first or second year guy that I think has the most potential to make an impact.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think Foster's going to see quite a few snaps, but I really think Coleman has overtaken him. But yeah, it would take, I think, even more than one injury to see one of the freshmen take like an actual workload. And again, I'm talking like 100 some snaps. I'm talking a few targets every game, like a real part of the offense. I would have a hard time seeing that.
So looking at tight end, now that we're ready to move on finally. This one it's interesting. You've got like a pretty clear top two. You've got a couple of exciting freshmen and then a couple other pieces. So looking at this group, I really think there's three guys who have a chance for snaps, and that's Malik Carr, Tyler Hunt, and incoming transfer Daniel Barker. Behind them, you've got Jack Nickel and Michael Masunis, both true freshmen and a couple of walk-ons. But you look at those top three, Kevin, and you can include anyone else if you want to, but I think it's those top three. Yeah. How do you see the tight end rotation and roles panning out?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of Daniel Barker. And I also think you're going to see a lot of Malik Carr. But I feel like Malik Carr is a guy who you're going to see when he's on the field, he's going to be running a route and possibly be getting targeted. And you're going to see Daniel Barker as a consistent, like almost every down part of the offense, doing some blocking, doing some route running, catching some balls. And I think when Malik Carr is in, it's kind of, we have this package and we have this set of plays that are designed around Malik Carr being in the game. And I think you're going to see kind of some specialized, a lot like we saw last year, but just on a bigger scale. Like last year, you saw a lot of that tight end screen game that we didn't really do unless Malik Carr was in the game. We didn't really run those same plays for Connor Hayward or Tyler Hunt, right? Malik Carr last year, this is according to PFF, he had 14 yards after the catch per reception. And I know, again, a lot of that is just, it was a screen pass, right? So almost every yard that he gained was a yard after the catch. I get it. But that's ridiculous for a tight end. That is absolutely ridiculous. 14 yards after the catch per reception. So I think you're going to see Malik Carr in some specialized packages and some specialized roles, but you're going to see a lot more on a snap-to-snap basis of Daniel Barker. Daniel Barker will be very productive, I think, this season as we continue to kind of really broaden the passing game. Now, you're looking at you kind of have a little bit of everything. You have the Keon Coleman, the big kind of jump ball guy who is also fast. You have Jaden Reed as the jack of all trades. He can do literally everything. You have Trey Mosley as that slot specialist, finding soft spots in the defense. And then you have Daniel Barker, the prototype kind of tight end, jump ball guy, 250 pounds. And then you have Malik Carr as this kind of wild card, X factor type guy who's like 6'5", but he might run a 4'5 flat at 235, 240 pounds, whatever he is. He's kind of that wild card in this offense that you can throw in there and he can really turn the juice up and make this offense kind of take that next leap if he is as good and returns on the promise this year. But I don't think he's ready for that full-time workload yet. So that's kind of where I'm at with the tight ends. He's the wild card of this whole offense to me.
Yeah, Ted Gilmore, the MSU tight ends coach, was the position coach on one of the press conferences, I think, last week as they go through fall camp. So he's obviously talking about his group. And he was piping up Malik Carr as becoming a much more well-rounded player, starting to complete. He's not just, you know, a pass-catching athlete anymore, but he's learning to block. He's learning to be a complete tight end. Daniel Barker is that. He spent 4 years at Illinois becoming that, and he can do it all. Connor Hayward last year earned the big role he had because he could block so well. He has great hands. He's a good route runner, but he earned his time on the field because he was willing to block and do it really well. I think this is kind of, I see it more as a competition between Barker and Carr to, I don't think Carr is going to be as much of a gadget guy as maybe you do, but that all depends on how much what Gilmore is saying is true. You know, he could be saying that because he wants Malik Carr to focus more on that. So he's saying, yeah, he's really focused on that, kind of to put the thought in Carr's head. Or it could be true. He could actually have come a long way because last year he didn't see the field too much because he couldn't do those other little things and went into this offseason making it a priority. So I think the first couple weeks, we're going to see those two battling it out. They're going to be expected to do everything, to block, to play from the backfield, to play on the line, obviously to catch passes. That said, I think Daniel Barker is an incredible addition to this team because it takes so much pressure off Malik Carr panning out. Like without Daniel Barker, it's Malik Carr or Tyler Hunt. And I love Tyler Hunt, but he's limited. I think that's pretty well documented. So, I do think Tyler Hunt will scrap out a role because he is kind of a do everything pretty well guy. And he's like a nice, you can put him out there and expect him to do what he's supposed to reasonably well, but he's not going to win you games. So I think those three will all see the field, but I think Barker and Carr going into the first couple of weeks are really in like a 50-50 battle for the majority of the workload.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, if you're looking at this in like Madden ratings or whatever, It's like Daniel Barker is like the steady 85. You know, it's just he's a really good player. You like having him in the lineup. But Malik Carr is the guy who's like an 81, but his potential is like 99. And you're like, I know the other guy's a little bit better right now, but I'm just going to put him in because, you know, as the season goes on, his overall is going to just skyrocket with the experience points that he gains and whatever, you know. But that's kind of the way I see it. It's like Daniel Barker's the steady, good, just solid Big Ten tight end. We know exactly what we're going to expect from him, even though he hasn't been at Michigan State. He's coming over from another program. He's been doing it for long enough that you kind of know what you're going to get. And Malik Carr is that, like I said, he's the offensive wild card. He's the guy who could boost this offense into some hyper gear, or if he just kind of, you know, does what he does again last year, it's, you know, it's going to put a little bit more pressure on Peyton Thorne rather than, you know, his skill players. But either way, with or without Malik Carr, I think we can agree that the pass catchers in general, if we're just talking about Daniel Barker plus the wide receivers, like it's a really good group. Malik Carr has just that potential to take it to that next level.
Yeah, so that's your offense, folks. The storylines have largely stayed the same the whole offseason, right? How will the offensive line hold up? How will the right side pan out? Can Peyton Thorne take the next step and be the centerpiece of an offense?
I'll give the people a peek behind the curtain. We hopped on the StreamYard today, and I think it was the first thing that you said at like 7 a.m. or whatever. It was just like, dude, our offensive line is like one or two injuries away from just disaster. And I think that's kind of how you can sum up this offense. With a healthy starting five, I think this could be a really, really good offense, like a top three, top four offense in the Big Ten. I think this could be a really good group, but we're two injuries on the offensive line away from this just falling into pieces potentially. Because you could lose a wide receiver or two and be okay. You could lose a tight end, you'd be okay. We could lose a running back or two, you'd be okay. Obviously, Peyton Thorne's quarterback, it's different. But offensive line just scares the hell out of me because that is thin ice that we are skating on.
Yeah, so... And I also think we don't really know what the ceiling of the starting five on offensive line is, right? Can we rely on these guys?
Yeah.
We had a lot of experience. Kevin Jarvis, AJ Arcuri, those guys, like they were pushers. They were pretty good. They were not exceptional, but they were pretty good. And I don't know if we have pretty good across the line anymore. Yeah. Pass catchers are, as long as we can get the ball downfield, they're primed and ready to make a huge splash. Peyton Thorne, we've seen him be good. Can he be great? And can he be consistently great? Big question. And how will the new running back committee pan out? So I think the offense is really exciting. I think it could be the real linchpin for this season, obviously. And yeah, I'm really excited to see the first couple weeks. And we got a couple exciting battles to watch.
Yeah, so Thursday we'll get to the defense. We'll be doing the same thing, going through the predictions, kind of running through our two deep, talking about potential young impact players, and we'll kind of go from there. Next week, we're making our predictions, and like I said, kind of make sure that you're following along on social media too, because we're going to start blasting out this picks pool that we're going to be doing the whole season. We're going to be picking Michigan State games plus another four or five. We'll settle on a number of other Big Ten games, big national games, for all the people who are college football fans more than just being Michigan State fans. So keep an eye on the social media. Make sure you're following for that, and we'll have some fun. So until Thursday, hope everybody has a great start to the week. Go green.
Go white.